And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
There's a lot going on in the oceans these days. Trouble is, we can't really see what that is. And so we have to turn to the science writers to give us that glimpse into the depths of the seas that lie in mystery. The March-April issue of Mother Jones Magazine turned its focus onto the oceans, providing a panorama of issues that are key to the ocean's futures. We talk with three of these authors as we go in-depth into the oceans when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Three ocean views. That's what you're going to get today as the Wild Side News goes in-depth into the oceans. Thanks to Mother Jones Magazine, which focused its attention on the oceans in their March and April edition, available on your newsstands right now, we bring to voice three of the authors. It's an interesting mix of perspectives. Following the news, we'll be talking with Jack Stern, whose OceanChampions.org is promoting sustainable oceans through support of political candidates who can champion the ocean's cause. In segment two, we talk with Bruce Franklin, who is personally dedicating his research and study to one fish that most people know almost nothing about, and yet, which Franklin believes is the key fish of the oceans, menhaden, once the most populous fish on the Atlantic coast of North America, likely the fish provided to the pilgrims to fertilize the seedling corn. Well, its legacy of fertilizer fish has gotten it into one very difficult position. It's a story with many dimensions. And in segment three, we talk about science writing, its current trends, and how specifically it can help to educate the public about the complex challenges of the ocean's future. We talk with Christina Reed, whose career is full steam ahead into the mysteries of scientific and oceanic reporting. Three Ocean Views, coming up following the news. So now, the news. At 20 below zero, most noses don't work that well. Well, one nose did, and detected the undeniable smell of crude oil, that is. It happened Sunday along Prudhoe Bay in Alaska. A worker noticed the smell of crude, which generally indicates a leak. Reports are that it took 36 hours to locate that leak, actually covered by gravel, to permit caribou to pass over. The 34-inch pipeline has since been shut down at both ends, but oil continues to seep from the pipe. BP Alaska, the owner of the pipeline, has recovered 50,000 gallons of oil and snowmelt. Some oil industry monitoring agencies suggest the spill is much larger than BP is discussing, noting a 798,000-gallon discrepancy in input and output records for the pipeline. This would make it the second-largest oil spill in Alaska's history since the 11-million-gallon spill of the Exxon Valdez. In Seattle, the fate of commercial and recreational fishing on the West Coast is on the line this week as fishery officials meet to consider options for this year's season. Salmon runs from California to Oregon are at risk of being closed due to severely reduced Chinook salmon runs on the Klamath River in southern Oregon. Fishing off the Washington coast may also be restricted, as coho salmon in the lower Columbia River recently were listed as threatened. Restrictions on the use of gill nets to harvest swordfish and thresher shark along the California and Oregon coasts may be relaxed. Restrictions are put in place to protect leatherback and loggerhead turtles, which get caught in the nets and die. 22 of Florida's 25 U.S. House members sent letters to Secretary of Interior Gail Norton on Monday, opposing the agency's plan to open a large area in the Gulf of Mexico to offshore oil and natural gas drilling about 100 miles south of the Panhandle. the letter expressed strong opposition to the proposal because it would have severe implications on Florida's economy and environment by increasing the risk of pollution to the state's beaches. Opponents to the proposal criticized the Minerals Management Service, which initiated the plan, for its failure to include public comment about these changes. Representative Jim Davis of Tampa said in a statement, "This administration is attempting to cut Floridians out of the discussions about drilling off of our coasts. Florida's congressional delegation will not simply roll over and let them annex the future of our pristine coastline to neighboring states, particularly states whose beaches are marred by tar balls." So there. And that's the news. And now to our main feature. Imagine if when you looked out across the landscape, wherever you are, there were no tall trees, only saplings. Imagine only forests of saplings, and how this would change our entire sense of our place. Well, out of sight, out of mind is an apt way of describing what's happening to our oceans. Because we cannot see the changes, we somehow think things are all right. But when you look at the creatures of the seas, you find that 90% of the mature large fish species are gone. The sea is filled with sapling fish, young fish, almost exclusively. There are many ramifications to this, and lots of people are talking about it, but it rarely cuts through into the mainstream media. And that is partly the inspiration for Mother Jones, the magazine, to dedicate its March-April edition to the oceans, bringing together some of the nation's best science writers to look at the issues from a variety of perspectives. We are featuring three of those authors in this special edition of the Wildside News, and we begin today's show with a look at the political challenges that oceans face now and into the future. On the Wildside News here, we keep talking about the oceans for a whole lot of reasons. One, we are of the oceans, and we have come from the oceans in many ways. They sustain us, they thrill us, and they tie us all together in a global network of interconnected waters. But unfortunately, as so many people are well aware, the oceans are in a state of relative collapse, depending on who you talk to. Different levels of concern are being raised. And joining us now from Alaska is Jack Stern. Jack, welcome to the Wildside News.
Hey, glad to be here.
Jack, you are involved with oceans along with David Wilmot. You've organized a group called Ocean Champions. You have kind of an interesting focus in terms of your group. There's many groups that are involved in ocean conservation, but you really have a focus that you feel has political significance.
That's correct. We are the only political organization for the ocean in the conservation world. We are a 501c4 with an attached political action committee. And our focus is really on building leadership in Congress in order to save the oceans.
Right. And so you really, as a matter of fact, your subtitle is Building Political Champions for the Oceans. Let's talk about what that term, political champion, means and why you think that's so important.
My background is as an environmental lawyer and litigator. And David's background is a PhD scientist doing ocean conservation work, and we sat down together, it's been, I don't know, 4 years ago, and realized that in all the lobbying work that we were doing in Congress, we just did not have any champions. We did not have the leadership that we needed in order to either fight bad proposals or to push the kind of legislation that we knew we needed in order to stop this decline that you referenced earlier. And we knew that the way to do that was to get involved in lobbying and electoral politics. And that the idea behind building leadership is that this is really about relationships. You have to be able to build relationships with members of Congress and be able to give them what they need if they're going to be able to give you what you need. And we all wish that politicians acted out of the goodness of their heart. And some of them do. And there are some great ones there who are really motivated just by their pure intentions. But the other reality is that politicians need to get elected. And if you're not helping them get elected, you're really not doing everything you can to show your commitment to them. And so we decided, we originally established Ocean Champions as a political action committee, and we got involved in the 2004 elections, got involved in 14 races and won 11 of them. And then we established our 501c4 organization to push for the reforms that we all know are needed in order to save our oceans.
In terms of the elections that you got involved in,
yes.
You say that of the 14 that you endorsed and supported, 11 won. To what degree did their involvement in the oceans help them to win?
Well, that's a hard thing to figure out. You know, I mean, the people that we endorsed were incumbent members of Congress, people who have been good on these issues over the years. We helped elect two new members to Congress, one Republican and one Democrat. A guy named Connie Mack, the fourth down in Florida, is a Republican, and then a guy named John Barrow, who's a Democrat from Georgia, represents Savannah. For these guys, we ran positive ads, and they certainly told us that it helped, and they appreciated our endorsements. You know, it's a difficult thing to measure because, in some degrees, you're at the margins, but we certainly know that we have been able to establish a relationship with the two new members that we helped elect, which is unlike any that we've had before with a member of Congress. I mean, they just really appreciated the help we gave them, and they're willing to really work for the oceans now.
There are, about 14 states of the 50 that actually border the oceans, and the rest aren't involved with oceans. Do you find it difficult to bring ocean issues to those landlocked states in terms of the politics?
Well, so far we have not tried to do that. For the most part, in fact, every person that we endorsed in 2004 was from a coastal state, and there were some strategic reasons for doing that. We found in our work in Congress over the years that the coastal members really have a lot more credibility on a lot of these issues than the landlocked members do. At least, I mean, I've sat in hearings and heard my congressman Don Young lambaste Joel Heffley from Colorado for a bill he introduced to restrict bottom trawling. You know, saying, you know, what do you know about bottom trawling? You're from Colorado. So our initial philosophy has been to go in and to try to build up the coastal members and make them the most outspoken advocates that we can. Now, that's not to say that there aren't plenty of people in inland districts who care about this stuff. It's interesting what you find out once you start doing this. We recently found out that Ralph Regula from Ohio has a keen interest in the ocean because he's established his friendship with Bob Ballard. So you never know where your leadership is going to come from. And so we're opportunistic in terms of looking for people who are in inland states, but primarily we think that the leadership will come from the coastal regions because that's where the constituents are going to have the most sort of personal interest in the oceans, and they're the most likely to tell their congressman or woman that this is important to them. When you look at the population dynamics of the country and consider that over half of our population lives in a coastal county, that's a significant number of people in Congress who are affected by the ocean.
So in terms of working with politicians to bring forward issues that are favorable to oceans, what issues do you think are the most effective? I mean, for example, some people would, you know, there certainly is an effort to awaken people to the fact that the oceans are in crisis, but that's not necessarily a positive political campaign.
Absolutely.
So I'm just curious, in terms of your own sort of spin on that, what do you find is most effective?
Well, it's interesting. You know, some of the health issues obviously sort of grab public attention the most. One issue that we're really focused on right now, and which we think may be a live issue in some campaigns, especially down in Florida, is this issue of trying to repeal the moratorium on new offshore oil and gas exploration and drilling. This is an issue that really, because of the Exxon Valdez and the spill that happened off Santa Barbara back in the 60s, you know, the public really that's an issue that sort of galvanizes public attention, especially for anybody who lives on the coast. The last thing they want to see is an oil rig a few miles off the coast.
Also, there's this issue now in this Congress, in this last session, passed legislation to fund the offshore sonic testing on all the coastal areas. That, to me, seems to be an enormous issue because I think a lot of people are sensitive to that, the fact that these enormous sonic booms can be devastating to the sea creatures.
Well, there's no question that sonic testing has a huge impact on marine mammals. I think that was an unfortunate bill that got through, and it's something that I know a lot of groups are working on. It's not been a major issue for us as yet, but you know, we're certainly tracking it, and if there is an opportunity to shine a light on it, I'm sure we will take advantage of it.
What would be the issues that a congressman or congresswoman would focus on in coastal areas? And it probably varies depending on where you are in the country.
All politics is local, right? So if you're in Florida right now, it's oil drilling because Congress is right in the midst of trying to lift this moratorium. Senator Domenici has a hearing, in fact, today on a bill that would open up this area in the Gulf Coast of Florida, Eastern Gulf, to new drilling. And that's just one of those things where places you can't go if you're a politician in Florida. So same thing in the coast of California. You know, there are other places where, you know, maybe it's aquaculture. But one of the things that we're focused on, and it's a harder thing to sort of convey to the public, and they don't see it as much, is this issue of ocean governance. There have been two national commissions, one independent funded by Pew, and then another that was appointed by the president, the U.S. Commission on Ocean Policy. That have come out with reports in the last couple of years that look at our entire system of ocean governance, what the problems in the oceans are. It's well documented exactly what's going on out there, the decline, but also the fact that we have a broken management system. There are over 20 federal agencies that have responsibility for some aspect of ocean management. And not a single one of those agencies is designated as the lead agency. So what you have is, I don't know if I'd describe it as chaos, but it's certainly just a mishmash and a hodgepodge and really a not a coordinated system in any way. I mean, you don't have the equivalent of the Department of Interior, which manages federal lands, in the oceans. You know, again, you know, this isn't a sexy issue, but it's a critically important issue to sort of make it an organic act for the oceans that would bring management at least under the authority of one federal agency that had the ability to coordinate and sort of direct the actions of the other agencies with management responsibility.
Who's taking the lead on that?
There have been a couple of bills introduced. One in the House is called Oceans 21. It was introduced by the co-chairs of the House Oceans Caucus, including Sam Farr of California, Kurt Weldon of Pennsylvania, Jim Saxon of New Jersey, and Tom Allen from Maine. So it's a really, and these are two Republicans and two Democrats. It's a very bipartisan bill, and essentially it seeks to correct a lot of these problems. Change the governance system. It's not gotten a lot of time yet. It's not moving right now. We're hoping that we can build momentum for it, certainly in the next session of Congress. Given where they are this year, it's unlikely to move. There is a companion bill, not exactly the same bill, but pretty similar, over in the Senate that was introduced by Barbara Boxer, co-sponsored by Frank Lautenberg. And it again is trying to get at some of these core principles of governance and really to try to set an agenda that says, you know, what we're going to do in the oceans is our primary responsibility for federal agencies is to protect, maintain, and restore the health of ocean ecosystems. And that's not something we have now. There is no sort of guiding principle like that that governs our use of the oceans.
If you were to look at the Congress right now and look for a potential oceans champion, who might people pay attention to?
Well, we have to say that Sam Farr, who represents the Santa Cruz and Monterey areas in California, is in the House, has just been fantastic. Sam, you know, comes from an area that is could not be more plugged into the oceans. Sam himself is just passionate about these issues and really has done a lot of heavy lifting. In the Senate, as I said, Senator Boxer has also really stepped to the plate. And oddly enough, there are the oceans have some strange politics. Senator Ted Stevens, one of my senators from Alaska, has actually been a real leader in fisheries conservation.
You know, I'm curious about that because I've certainly watched Senator Stevens during the ANWR debates, and yep. he's kind of a hard guy in those issues. What is the issue that he is? Where is this soft or tender side for Ted Stevens?
Well, I don't know if it's a soft or tender side because certainly Senator Stevens is as tough as they come, but he's taken a real interest in fisheries, and I'll tell you why. It's because fisheries are such a huge driver of the Alaska economy, and
they're still very strong.
They're still very strong up here, and it's something that there's a fishery management council that manages the fisheries up here, and they take great pride in the fact that they've had a fairly successful run in terms of managing their fisheries. There's still a lot of issues up here that need to be addressed, but compared to other regions of the country, they're doing a much better job.
Is he promoting, therefore, sustainable practices?
In 1996, there was a bill passed called the Sustainable Fisheries Act, which was an amendment to the Magnuson-Stevens Act. It was then the Magnuson Act. It's been changed to add Senator Stevens' name to it because he's taken such an ownership in it. The Magnuson-Stevens Act governs the prosecution of commercial fisheries in this country. These amendments in 96, which were spearheaded by Senator Stevens, toughened the definitions of overfishing, toughened the regulation of bycatch, and added protection for essential fish habitats. So it was really a very positive conservation-oriented act. So, yes, you would have to say that certainly Senator Stevens has been a leader in terms of doing the right thing in the law. And he's recently passed a reauthorization of the act out of committee, and it maintains all those things and actually strengthens the law in some places. So,
the other side of the political spectrum is someone like Barney Frank.
That's correct.
Who is certainly one of the most progressive liberals. But tell us the story about Barney. He's playing a different angle on this.
He absolutely is, and it's one of those things that's been very frustrating for us because, you know, Barney Frank, his lifetime score from the League of Conservation Voters is probably well into the 90s. He clearly votes the right way on almost all environmental issues. But in terms of fisheries, Barney Frank represents a district that has a whole lot of commercial fishermen. And if you know anything about the New England fisheries, you know that they are a complete mess. It's one of the biggest fishery disasters in the world, I would say. And yet Barney Frank has consistently opposed and attempted to weaken the protections in the Magnuson-Stevens Act against overfishing. He has, and that's largely because he has these constituents, these commercial fishermen, who tell him that, you know, the act is killing them and putting them out of business, and he needs to do something about that. So for whatever reason, Barney Frank doesn't see this fisheries crisis as an environmental problem.
It's pretty obvious why. He needs to stay elected.
Well, but, you know, I would say that given how long Barney Frank's been there, I seriously doubt he's not going to get reelected. But he thinks he's serving his constituents. Right. Unfortunately, he's taken a very short-term view of the situation. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, we want to go back and talk about leadership. You know, Barney Frank should be exercising leadership to make sure that those fisheries are better managed. And that if the fisheries fleet in New England needs to be reduced, and I think almost everybody would say that it does, that you get too many boats chasing too few fish, then Barney Frank needs to take a leadership role in helping to reduce that fleet and move his economy in a sustainable direction, because it's not going that way right now. And by, you know, digging in his heels and fighting against overfishing protections in the law, he's ultimately not serving his constituents very well, is what we would say.
Well, you know, when Barney Frank speaks, people listen.
It's true.
He really is a master of oratory. What questions might people ask their candidates that you think would be critical for them to do a quick evaluation on their stand of the ocean, or to challenge them to be more aware of these issues?
Well, I think first of all, you would just ask them, you know, what have you done? What have you done to take a leadership role in protecting our oceans? I mean, that's in the questionnaire that we send out to candidates, that's the most basic thing we ask. Tell us what you've done, because we really want to know. I mean, it's not possible to know everything that your congressman does.
But then I would guess that most have done very little.
Most haven't. That's correct. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are a few who have. And I'll just go back and make this point. It doesn't take everybody in the Congress to be a leader on this issue. There are lots of people, as you point out, in the inland areas who will go along because it's important to them. They don't have anything against the oceans. Most people love the oceans. But we need people to, what have you done? And then, you know, there are specific things. You can ask them about their position on fisheries. Because right now, you referenced the decline of the oceans. You know, we're down to 10% of the large fish species, things like tunas, sharks, swordfish. We have 10% of what we had a century ago. 90% decline. And that, you know, most people just don't understand that the things are that bad. It's vitally important that more people in Congress take a leadership role on this issue, because I mean, we're headed to the place where we're going to have an ocean full of little more than jellyfish if we don't reverse these trends.
From a proactive side, what would you recommend that people suggest to their Congress?
Well, I would encourage them there to support these. There are a couple of bills, one of them being pushed by the Marine Fish Conservation Network, that would make changes to the Fishery Management Council system to improve the fisheries management system. Senator Stevens' bill in the Senate is also a good bill, and we would encourage folks to support that. And the other thing is, you know, I mentioned this problem of ocean governance. We would encourage folks to ask their congressmen, congresswomen, senators to support both the Oceans 21 bill in the House and Senator Boxer's bill in the Senate. The main thing is that the single most important thing that people can do is pick up the phone or write a letter or an email to their representatives and say, you know, the oceans are important to me. And I'm watching what you're doing. I want you to take a leadership role in this issue, because that's what we hear that over and over and over from people on the Hill, is that, you know, the public isn't contacting us about these issues. And I have to say, it almost doesn't matter, you know, what the specific bill is that people are calling it. If it's about offshore drilling, if it's about fisheries, if it's about governance, if it's about aquaculture, whatever it is, people really need to become more vocal on this issue, and that's, you know, that's one of the things we reference, is this grassroots support, which so far has not materialized, and it's kind of baffling to us because, as I said, so much of the country lives in coastal areas, and yet somehow we just have not been able to motivate those people to actually put pressure on Congress for change. We've really got to change that dynamic in this country if we're going to get the progress on oceans that we need.
This is an election year. Let's look at both sides. Who should people be working for from the perspective of being an ocean champion?
Yep.
And who are some of those that you feel are standing in the way of sustainable futures for our oceans?
Well, I mean, I've already mentioned some of the folks who are good. Sam Farr has been fantastic. California, you know, there are a couple of leaders in New Jersey, both Frank Pallone and Jim Saxton. I mentioned before, Johnny Mack down in Florida has really been leading the charge on offshore drilling. Senator Bill Nelson is up for re-election down there this year, and he has also taken a real leadership role in fighting these proposals. But it's interesting. The guy that they're all fighting is a guy from California, from the Central Valley, by the name of Richard Pombo.
He's everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I got to tell you, in you know, the Mother Jones article, they singled out Mr. Pombo as public enemy number one for the oceans.
He's kind of public enemy number one for all land issues.
Just about. And I tell you, you know, he sits in the place as chairman of the Resources Committee. And in the House, almost all ocean legislation has to go through the Resources Committee. Mm-hmm. And he has essentially sat on everything that we want to do. Wayne Gilchrist, who's a Republican from the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and is somebody that Ocean Champions endorsed in 2004 and really has an interest in these issues. He is the chairman of the subcommittee on fisheries and oceans. And Representative Pombo essentially won't let Mr. Gilchrist hold hearings on a lot of these issues related to the reports of the two oceans commissions in terms of changing the ocean governance system. He's standing in the way of that, and he's got to go. I mean, it's really that simple.
I'm not sure exactly, but I almost think there's a Republican who's running against him.
Well, it's interesting. This is becoming a very interesting race. Pete McCloskey, who was a Republican congressman from San Francisco, and one of the authors of the Endangered Species Act, actually moved to Pombo's district and has filed to run in the Republican primary against him. He's out there raising money and cruising around the district in an RV.
Well, that's a good one to pay attention to.
It's absolutely a good one to pay attention to. There are a couple of Democrats who have filed and are running. There's the primary in June, and we'll find out then who is going to be the candidate to take on Mr. Pombo in the fall. But this is a race that we're going to be heavily involved in. I know a number of other groups are also going to be involved, Sierra Club, Defenders of Wildlife. I mean, everybody looks at this guy as public enemy number one for the environment. He could not be more hostile. And you know, he's the guy who's leading the charge on repealing the moratorium on offshore drilling.
Yes.
I mean, this is he's also the guy who you know, he wants to get rid of the Endangered Species Act if he could.
Sell off our national parks, encourage oil drilling in all public lands.
He's trying to weaken the Marine Mammal Protection Act. If it's a good environmental law and it does anything good to protect our environment, he wants to get rid of it.
So. Yeah. People want to learn more about Ocean Champions. What's the best way for them to do so?
Well, they should go to our website, which is pretty simple. It's oceanchampions.org, and they can find out everything we do in terms of both lobbying for legislation and getting involved in the elections to try to change the dynamic in Washington.
And, of course, you do literally have Ocean Champions PAC, so you have the authority to get in there and get involved.
Yeah, and actually, even through our 501c4, we're set up in such a way that we can run independent expenditure campaigns on behalf of candidates or in opposition to them.
Well, Jack Stern with the OceanChampions.org, I want to thank you for lending your voice to the Wildside News.
Well, thanks for inviting us to talk soon.
Thanks. I know you care about the oceans, so take a right step and bring up these issues to candidates running in the 2006 elections. If every politician were asked their thoughts about the future of the oceans and what they plan to do about it, the 2007 crop of legislators would be primed for action. In just a moment, we turn our attentions to the Menhaden. No, not a terrorist group, actually a fish that is being terrorized on America's shores. When your Voice of the Earth returns, here on the Wild Side News.